of relief. A good place where good people get food, yeah. Help your fellow man, a good thing to do, yeah. Come in and just descend, be afraid of me, I'm...
You're listening to Stumptown Trade Review, your online resource for independent trades and graphic novels. I'm Thor.
I'm Brian.
And today we are going to be reviewing Remake by Lamar Abrams and City of Dust by Steve Niles and Ching.
Yeah, that's C-H-N-G. There's no vowels. So,
yeah, Brandon Ching.
Ching.
All right, let's start with Remake. Remake is a series of short little comedy vignettes.
Yeah.
Put together in a book about Max Guy, a superhero. I think he's... Is he a robot? Is he a full-on robot? Is he like Iron Man?
No, I think he's robot. I think he's kind of based on the whole Astro Boy
That's
concept.
What I was thinking. It was like a... Kind of like a satire of Astro Boy...
Yeah.
Style. And he's got his roommate, Cardigan, who is a full robot.
Right.
And so it's just short little comedy vignettes about the adventures of Max Guy.
Right. And it's not just Max Guy fighting other villains. You also get Max Guy at home hanging out on the couch with Cardigan and, you know...
And Cardigan meeting a girl in the supermarket with Max Guy who has no hands, who has spikes for hands.
Right. Yeah, it's that kind of thing where there's just... Yeah, it's not a superhero comic. It's, you know, the slice of superhero life comic.
Sure, yeah. So how did you feel about this book?
You know, I think that my I liked the book. You know, we chose this book over a couple of other books because it definitely was stronger than some of the other books that, you know, we had a choice from for the week. I liked parts and pieces of it. There were some that were funny. There were some that were creative. Overall, I think my biggest problem was that Max Guy is just a spoiled... brat, and I did not find him the least bit likable.
Really? I liked Max Guy. I thought he was funny, yeah. I actually enjoyed him as a character. I saw him as quite a bit different from the little tyrant who it seems like you're describing is like that character. I think he's different. Yeah, I think that it was handled in a different way for me where I actually could get behind him and laugh with him, whereas with the little tyrant, I just couldn't. Like, I couldn't relate to that character at all.
No.
I thought that some of the stuff that he did was absolutely hilarious in this.
You know, it was just, for me, it was just like one annoying or bad-intentioned action or word after another. I mean... He was just rude and mean and disrespectful and all these things, and I just had such a hard time.
See, I saw him
behind
as,
him and ugh.
I saw him as sort of like an embodiment of the punk rock ethos, like, you know, screw you, I'm all about me and against the establishment, you know.
Oh, all about me, yeah.
I thought it was hilarious. I thought it was funny. He's obviously not realistic character in any way. I mean, he's a robot superhero.
Right.
But I thought it was hilarious how he's gets in a fight with the stretchy guy, the guy that's like Mr. Fantastic or whatever, and gets his ass kicked by him and then just like sort of flies away like...
Well, yeah, I mean, that was fine with that.
I thought there was a lot of hilarious moments in here.
Yeah, but, like, where he eats all the marshmallow kitties,
yeah,
vomits then... up a, I don't know, flaming radioactive something marshmallow kitty, who then eats Cardigan,
And he goes back to eating the marshmallow kitties.
And then he goes, after he rescues Cardigan and somehow brings him back to life, he then goes back to eating the marshmallow kitties.
Yeah, I thought that was hilarious.
But it was just, he didn't learn anything. He'll never learn anything.
Yeah, because the marshmallow kitties were good.
God. See, and again, it's just all about him and what he wants. And
sure.
Oh, man. No, I really, you know, just... I'm all about the superhero parody, you know, because there are things about superheroes that just inherently beg to be made fun of.
I thought that what this really does is that the superhero essentially is a narcissist, because that's what they're all about. If they weren't all about themselves and being a hero, I don't think that they would be a superhero. Sure, they have super abilities or whatever. And so I think that that's what this highlights and pokes so much fun at. That's what the point of this book was. And I just thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, for me, there were so many things in this. You know, there was the fact that Max Guy, for me, was just not a likable character.
Sure.
And then there were... You know, for this to be a comedy or a parody, I felt like there had to be some forethought to some of this. And some of it I thought there was some forethought to, and I could see sort of the humor of it. But there were some, like, where it's accidents bring people together, and it's, I don't know, two-thirds of the way through the story, or two-thirds of the way through the book. And it starts with Max Guy seeing a woman walking across the street, pushing a baby in a stroller, talking on her cell phone, not paying attention. And he ends up... Max Guy ends up saving the truck driver, not the woman and the baby. And that's not even the part I had a problem with. The part I had a problem with is that he leaves the truck driver off at the side of the road, walks away from him. The truck driver's just fine. And then when he comes back, the truck driver is a skeleton.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, you know, he makes a glib comment, he was alive when I saw him, his condition must have worsened after I set him down here. He and the little robot, yes, there's another little robot, go off for ice cream, have ice cream. We get the origin of the robot, which was, you know, I guess interesting. And then eventually we see the truck driver back as Bones again, and everything's fine except for now he's Bones and he's just like ha ha ha.
He's driving the truck
this
again.
Is not logical. I thought you were dead. Now I was a little coma. I'm all better now. I mean, it was totally nonsensical, non sequitur, and I just felt like there was nothing. I mean, I struggled to see what the point of that entire story was.
I felt like the point was is that a lot of times in superhero comics, like, the repercussions of actions are never fully realized. And so this guy dies and everything resolves at the end. Oh, is a good ending. Everything worked out fine. Even though, like, there were several things, I felt like that was poking fun at so many superhero stories where that's the way it is.
I don't know. I just felt it. I felt that story, you know, along with others, were just so unsatisfying.
I don't know. I feel like I completely got this book and was in there with him. And I do feel like this is not going to be a book for everybody. The humor is definitely twisted. And I feel like if you're into that kind of humor, you get it and you enjoy it. But if you're not, then you just won't.
Yeah, you know, I couldn't get past how big of an asshole Max Guy was.
What's funny is I totally see where you're coming from, because I felt that exact same way about the little tyrant, but I don't feel that way at all about Max Guy. Oh, and man. I think Max Guy's hilarious.
See, you know, what bugged me, I mean, here was the one where I'm just like, okay, that's it. I am so done trying to like Max Guy. You know, there were some interesting funny parts with Cardigan's girlfriend, who has these, you know, spikes for
hands.
You know, and I thought that was kind of poking fun at the whole, well, just because someone has spikes for hands, you assume you're going to have a big fight with them. And no, that you know, I thought, all right, I got that part. He and she have had some issues in the past. He comes home, he's all beat up from velociraptors. She's going to make dinner. He falls asleep. He wakes up. She's made pasta and bread and liquid. And he's eating the dinner. Max Guy is eating the dinner. And he says, it's great, but I want something else now. He takes his Max Blaster out and blasts it. The idea of the Max Blaster is kind of this omni gun where it can do anything. Yeah. And, you know, one of the funny bits I did like was he turned a baby's saliva into honey to get it to shut up, which I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah.
But he blasts this wonderful meal that she's prepared, and he makes it into grits, which he can't stand. He spits it out. So he then, you know, blasts it into... What did he blast it into? Oh, he blasted it into knives.
Yeah.
Then he blasted all the knives into a strawberry, and then walks away.
Yeah.
So
she ate the strawberry, though.
Huh?
She eats the strawberry.
She eats the strawberry, but still, it's like he's taken the entire dinner, which he worked so hard to prepare, and... You know, before anybody really gets much of it done, he's destroyed the whole dinner.
I know, it's hilarious.
No, it's annoying.
No, it's
hilarious. You're not invited to dinner at my house.
I wish I had an Omni gun.
I mean...
So that when there was crap on the table, I could just...
Blast it into one strawberry and none of us would get any food.
Yeah.
God, you know, it was just... You know, it was that thing where he was such a jerk.
I know, and I really enjoyed this book. I mean, there were some that fell flatter than others, but for the most part, I really enjoyed every gag in this book, and it was funny. And I do agree, I can see how you would think that he was a jerk and not be able to get behind him, but that's exactly why I did like him. And I don't know where that fine line is between Little Tyrant and Max Guy, but I felt this one played to all of the strengths of the jerk as a comedic hero, and Little Tyrant didn't. And so I do agree, though, that this is definitely something, if you're into that humor, you're going to like it. And if you're not, I would say in the store, read maybe like the first story or something before picking it up, because obviously you strongly dislike this, and I really did like this and thought this was hilarious.
You know, speaking of the first story, now here's something I found really interesting. Speaking of the very first story has Max Guy saving the day, flying off and hearing somebody say something negative about it, turning around and blasting the holy hell out of the guy. And what I found interesting about that was that's the entire setup for Irredeemable, which just came out from Boom. And I don't think that he was, you know, ripping that off, or Boom was ripping that off, because this came out much before that. I just thought it was kind of interesting these two comics released at roughly the same time had the exact same
premise. Well, this one is different, because the guy is saying, oh, what a nice robot. And in the previous panel, Max Guy is saying, I can read lips, I wonder what he's saying. Mm-hmm. And so this kind of like highlights exactly who Max Guy is. He's this arrogant jerk, you know, he thinks he can read lips, and this guy says, what a nice robot. And he says, gay robot, and then he turns around and blasts the guy.
Yeah, but he was doing it because there was a little alien living inside his head.
No, he finds that out later. He's like, oh yeah, I meant to do that. But really is because he thought the guy called him a gay robot.
Yeah, I don't know. The book just, I don't know. I didn't enjoy it as much as I had hoped I would. And, you know, there were some interesting, funny panels. Like I said, Honey Mouth was really funny. But, you know, for me, like I said, I just couldn't get past the fact that he was just such a jerk.
And that's what I loved about it. I loved the fact that he was a jerk. He was like that anti-hero that's funny. I don't know. I don't know why I found him funny, but I really did.
You know, something that was really different about this is that I'm trying to think who it was. I was reading an interview with a comic creator who was saying that he loved going to shows and having kids bring him comics that they had created, because kids don't know the rules to comics, so they break them constantly. You can have a kid telling a Batman story, and then all of a sudden aliens show up just because the kid really wanted aliens to show up. Whether it makes sense in the story or not, the kid wanted aliens, so there's aliens. And there's something about how, you know, we sort of know how comics are supposed to go, and so we write comics the way we think comics are supposed to go, and kids don't have that at all. Mm-hmm. I kind of got that feeling with this, with, you know, for as big of a jerk as Max Guy was, I really got a feeling like anything could happen, because sure. there were no rules to this.
Yeah.
It was really just whatever crazy right turn Lamar Abrams wanted to have happen at that moment was going to happen, whether it made sense in storytelling or not. If he wanted all of a sudden, you know, a giant octopus, there was going to be a giant octopus.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's very different than anything else out there because of that. Because yeah. there's just nothing else out there. Everything else plays by the rules, and he's just saying, screw the rules, kind of like Max Guy. I'm just going to do what I want. Uh-huh. And so on that hand, it was very unpredictable, which I enjoyed. I enjoyed the unpredictability of it, because, yeah, you never knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
You never expected Max Guy to, you know, do what he would do, because who would?
Yeah.
You know, Max Guy would. You know, and I thought that the character design of Max Guy actually was kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know, it really hearkened to early anime, manga, you know, the whole Astro Boy type look. I mean, he's, you know, he kind of has that, you know, early 60s Japanese robot boy look to him.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really actually a pretty cool design that, you know, had this been played straight, that it would have made a pretty cool looking character design.
Sure.
And, you know, it also works for being Max Guy, too. You know, I mean, it just works for him just being the crazy robot kid.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It was $13 from Ad House Books. You know, for $13, you know, you got a lot of content. It's, you know, like I said, I didn't enjoy it nearly as much as you did. I probably would not pick up volume 2 of this.
I'm there.
But I'll read yours when I come over. There were parts that I thought worked really well. There were parts I thought just failed miserably. My biggest problem was that I just couldn't get behind the character.
Sure, and I really think that you have to have a certain type of sense of humor to it. Really get behind this book.
Yeah, and I can see that. I mean, if you can buy into to Max Guy, then, you know, this is just wild and crazy fun.
Yeah.
If you can't, then it's just one annoyance after another. It's like, oh, come on. So, yeah, I'm thinking this is going to get re-gifted to my brother-in-law at Christmas. So, not getting sold on Amazon, getting re-gifted.
All right. Our next book is City of Dust by Steve Niles and Brandon Jing. And this is a sci-fi adventure about Philip Chrome. And he's essentially a cop in the future. And the basic sense of the reality of the future is that religion is eliminated and outlawed. And essentially storytelling and books, fiction, I guess, is outlawed. This is a society ruled by fact.
Right, so all fiction, all fantasy, everything that is not provable by fact is eliminated, and not just eliminated, but made criminal to the point where we see him in the first scene chasing down a guy who was supposedly saying, I'm trying to think what the phrasing was on it, chanting curses at children is the crime. And the guy says that he was just praying with his children, and Chrome's response was, well, it's the same thing. And it ends up being that the guy, you know, very sci-fi, fantasy, future thing, you know, please stand still while your, you know, your trial proceeds. 30 seconds later, the guy's found guilty and he's executed.
I mean, it's like a Judge Dredd type place. Right. Mixed with a little bit of Fahrenheit 451
style. There was definitely a very heavy Fahrenheit 451 on top of this, especially when you get later on in it and you realize that there are no books in this society.
Sure.
And
it's almost Blade Runner-esque. Like, it really mixes a lot of elements of, like, really great when I think of great sci-fi properties, like, it really right. mixes a lot of, like, the best of those.
It does.
And not in an overt way. I didn't think, like, except for the Judge Dredd part, I didn't really think overtly, like, you know, oh, this is exactly like that. This is exactly like that. It was more a sense right. that I got at the end when I was thinking back and reflecting on it. Like, oh, yeah, that's kind of style.
For me, the Fahrenheit 451 was pretty omnipresent, just because, you know, the character in 451 is a fireman and his job is to go and seek out books and burn them. Mm-hmm. Just as in this book, Chrome is a police officer who, you know, basically he says he doesn't regularly enforce, you know, what is it, imagination crimes or whatever it is.
Yeah, but it was more like that he was just a regular beat cop. That stuff was also illegal, and so he'd have to handle every once in a while.
Right, but it was that kind of thing where, you know, you've got this character who you think, you know, should be one thing, you know, a fireman you think should be putting out fires, you know, policemen should be, you know, protecting people, and it turns out it's almost the exact opposite where it's, you know, Big Brother is watching.
Sure.
Type deal. So, you know, overall, why don't we start with sort of the, you know, pacing of this. This was 6 issues. It's a pretty, you know, big book.
Yeah.
How did you feel about the pacing of it?
Well, what was interesting is that it's really paced more as like a sci-fi book than as a horror book, in that it's revealing elements of this futuristic society. And really, besides like the first 2-3 pages, there's no horror in this book at all, which if you look at the cover
right.
presents a sci-fi horror book.
It does. You know, and Steve Niles, you see the name on there, you immediately think 30 Days of Night, and you start seeing, you know, you start having visions of horror, and then you look at the cover and, you know, just hovering over the head of Chrome is, you know, Nosferatu and other, you know, creatures. And then there were covers, you know, there were covers to this throughout the book, and all of the covers are very horror inspired as opposed to sci-fi inspired covers. So yeah, I was really surprised as I was reading it that the horror element is very subdued in this, and the sci-fi is the primary focus of this.
And it's a crime mystery, yes. too. Like, he is a cop. And so this book is really not a sci-fi horror. It's more of a sci-fi crime book.
Kind of a Minority Report, then.
Yeah.
Yes, and I'll agree.
That's where, when I really finished it, that's where I felt it was like Blade Runner, in that it's a sci-fi book, but really it's this cop searching through this mystery of trying to find out what's going on. And that's where I got the Blade Runner kind of sense at the end of the book.
Yeah. You know, and the thing is that I thought that this was paced out pretty well. I didn't feel, you know, six issues starts to feel padded after a while a lot of times. And yeah. I didn't feel like there was a lot of padding in this.
I feel like he's really setting up this bigger world with, like, his Philip Crumb's relationship with, I assume, was a prostitute.
Yeah.
And so he really sets up this relationship that I assume is going to pay off later, or kind of pays off in the end. But it's setting up this world, this fantasy world, sci-fi world, and it's paced that way as opposed to just getting through a story.
Right, right. Yeah, I felt like a lot of setup for this, and I think that perfect time to talk about it. I felt reading this that this almost was like a prequel to a video game. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, that sounds bad. That sounds really bad, you know. But I felt like this was, you know, you could have this video game where you've got this cop going through. And I got to tell you, the character design on Chrome and this whole world is really cool. I mean, I could really see some cool character design. And, you know, I could see a great video game, first-person shooter type game coming out of this.
Mm-hmm.
But I really felt like this was reading like a prequel to that, where you've got this really cool visuals, this, like you said, Blade Runner-esque city, lots of things, and you kind of need a reason for this guy to be going around and doing things. This sets up such a cool world.
Yeah.
This is really a world-creating book.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I mean by it. And the visuals are set up kind of video game-esque. You've got flying, you've got shooting, you've got, you know, he's got a cool jetpack. I mean, he's got all these different neat elements.
That being said, there wasn't a lot of action in this book. Even though you're describing all those things, and I'm thinking back, like, yeah, that did happen. It didn't feel like it was action. It felt like it was story.
Right. And I look at it like, you know, Like some of those first-person shooter games where you've got to go through, and yes, you've got, you know, the people jumping out at you and you have to shoot them or whatever it is, but there's also the mystery you have to go through and solve the story, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And so that's kind of how I saw it, is setting that up, that kind of thing. And like I said, I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean it in this was really world-creating, that you could then, you know, take this and have a very satisfying, you know, video game based on, you know, Philip Chrome, you know, where he's going and searching out some of these creatures that, you know, we see in the background in the cover here. And that would be a game. And then, you know, you would sort of be like, well, how did all these creatures get out? Blah, blah, blah. You know, here's this great, you know, I really enjoyed this book, you know, this book where you've got all these characters and sort of understanding where they all came from.
Uh-huh.
So that's what I mean by it feels like a prequel to a video game. That, and I thought that a lot of the art in here, you know, has sort of that computer, you know, all done on like a computer. Like
3D rendering. Kind
yeah.
of. Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
And so because of that, like I said, it really felt geared towards a video game, geared towards that audience as well. And, you know, and like I said, I don't mean that as a bad thing. I don't think they have to be mutually exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that there were some really cool parts in this that would lend themselves to that kind of world.
Yeah. Yeah, I really enjoyed this book, and it really does set up like a great new sci-fi intellectual property, you know,
right.
like that is unique and of itself. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because it's setting up a longer storyline where he's now realized that the world around him isn't exactly as he thought it was, and now it's almost setting up that he's fighting to change that, you
right.
know, and he's been recruited to the resistance force against this.
Yeah, the world that he, you know, that he's been brought to not only believe in but also defend is not the world that he thought that he was defending.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and I think that brings up a great part about the plot, that there's a couple of plots going on here.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
and I felt that there were some that worked better than others. That the plot, the murder mystery plot was pretty cool. You know, it was a satisfying murder mystery plot. It almost worked in the way of Columbo stories, where you know who the murderer is.
Yeah.
It's how is the character going to solve it?
Yeah.
And find the missing parts to it. The missing parts to it was where I had a problem with it. They're not even the bad guys in this. The murderers. And it's kind of hard to believe that the murderers aren't really the bad guys in this.
Yeah. But
the murderers are... And I don't think I'm giving anything away here. The murderers are...
Vampires,
werewolves, and assorted other fantasy horror monsters. And, you know, they were created by a character in this story because he wanted to jumpstart the imagination of people. He thought that people's imaginations had basically stagnated because, you know, fantasy was outlawed. That's where I had a big problem with this story, was that you want to kickstart people's imagination, so you start with their nightmares?
Yeah.
You know, and that's where I had a real problem. And again, I think that's kind of also where I made that jump into the video game thing, because, you know, it gives people an excuse to run around shooting vampires and werewolves and all. But, you know, there was a flawed logic there that I had a really hard time wrapping my brain around.
And I felt like they present him as, like, this genius scientist, you know?
Right.
And he thought that he could control them, like, how... They didn't explain, like, how he had lost control.
Yeah, I mean, he said that he thought he could control them, that they had some built-in programming, if you will.
Yeah.
And... You know, and to get beyond that is really to spoil things. So I'm gonna leave that as it is. But, you know, the built-in programming failed, basically. Yeah. And so now you had all these creatures. But it just seemed, you know, that had bad idea written all over it.
Yeah.
You know, why is that you are going to create this? Why are you not going to create, I mean, flying pigs, for God's sake? Or
unicorns or something like that. Yeah, I mean, something like that,
totally,
you know?
Innocuous. You know, Pegasus, whatever. You know, something that... You know, yeah, just is not going to go around killing people and causing horror and terror. That you
well,
think
I guess,
will
wait
somehow...
a minute, wasn't the point that he was going to try to kill the...
Yeah, but, I mean...
The real bad guys,
but, I mean, yes, that was his point, but that was also not his point. I mean, his point was that he was going to create something that was going to kickstart people's imaginations. I mean,
he was trying to be efficient, Brian. He didn't want to do both in different ways. He wanted to kill two birds with one stone. Come on.
Then make a killer clown, for God's sakes. I mean, something. But I mean, just starting with people's nightmares just did not seem like the most logical way to kickstart a collective, you know, imagination and consciousness.
He's an efficient scientist. Come on. God,
he's something. But, you know...
Sure, so, I agree with you.
That, you know... So there was a big hole here in the logic, and, you know, the core logic of one of the characters that stopped this book for me from being a really, really, like, great book.
Yeah.
You know, and knocked it down to the level of summer blockbuster for me. And that's really how I felt when I was reading this. I didn't think I was reading a great piece of literature. I really didn't. I was enjoying myself, and I was enjoying just reading it.
Yeah, it was a great sci-fi read. I mean, if you love sci-fi, this is a great book for you.
It is. And, you know, with a little bit of horror element in it. Almost like Pitch Black, you got sci-fi and you got these monsters, you know.
So I feel like that one was a little more horror-ish than this, but yeah, I see what you're going for.
And it wasn't until we just got to, you know, this reveal about why the character had created these creatures. It was one of those just great big logic holes that stopped me and went, okay, yeah, we're really not designed to think about this too much.
Yeah.
Because everything else was great. I mean, there were some fun parts in this and, you know,
and really interesting ideas, like that, yeah. The whole idea of reducing fantasy, but it didn't seem like there was this fascist state in place like in 451. Yeah. You know? It was really more that they had decided that religion caused too many problems and fantasy caused too many problems, so they had built in this law.
Right.
And so it wasn't like there was this fascist state that was just oppressing everybody. It was just like it is now with really rich people and really poor people.
Right.
Except for there was no fantasy, no religion.
Right. And, you know, and I thought that was kind of, like you said, a really neat point. And, you know, there were some messages that were just beat over our heads repeatedly in this. It was a pretty heavy-handed, condemnation of not questioning what's going on around you.
Sure. And,
but again, like I said, the book wasn't about subtleties. The book wasn't about making, you know, a deeper point. It was about fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, really. And one of my favorite parts of this book is very early on when we're first introduced to Chrome. You know, very first introduced to Chrome, he's hanging out on his beat, and he said, there's no page numbers on this, so I apologize. It's about five pages in. We're just introduced to Chrome. It's at the top of the page, and here's the text box. My father was sentenced to life in prison for attempting to poison a child's mind with impossible ideas which could lead towards tendencies towards violence, death, or worse. Now that's the text box. The visual that goes with that is Chrome flying through this, you know, futuristic society in a jetpack.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got the juxtaposition of how fantasy and ideas are, you know, bad in this society. And you have this idea of a guy running around in a jetpack, which, yeah, I thought was a great juxtaposition of it, that in a society where, you know, fantasy and imagination are, you know, illegal, we wouldn't have this comic book, this thing wouldn't exist, which I thought was just a great little visual cue to that. And there were lots of those tucked in here. So, there were things in here that I really liked. You can't think too much about the book. It under logic and scrutiny, it breaks down, especially, you know, not just the logic hole of the main character, you know, of this, you know, guy who created these, monsters. Fantastical creatures, these monsters, but also in the resolution, it doesn't work as well logically.
I totally agree with you. Like, there was a certain point I remember, like, about halfway through the book where I was just like, I'm not thinking about it, I'm just going with it, you know?
And it's like a summer blockbuster. You can't sit there and think it through. You just got to go along for the ride and just accept
enjoy
it
yourself.
And enjoy it.
Sure.
And that's, again, where I came back to the video game. You know, at some point in time, you've just got to sit down and go, I'm going to go blast zombies. You know, why not?
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to go and hunt werewolves and vampires and all these other creatures because they're running around the streets. Why not? You know, and it's this futuristic society where imagination's been outlawed. Cool. You know?
So how did you like the art?
I'm back and forth on the art, to tell you the truth. Like I said, there were some panels and some pages that were laid out really well. I thought that the use of splash pages and large panels was done really well.
Mm-hmm.
It really let CHNG. Come on, give me a vowel, something. I thought it really allowed him to show off some really great art.
Yeah.
The whole computer generated 3D rendering thing. I don't know. Sometimes it feels a little flat and artificial, you know? And so there were times where I had, I don't know.
I think for the most part, it worked for me. There were some times where it did feel a little artificial.
Yeah.
But I can forgive it because it really builds up like a unique world. And because it is that 3D rendering, there's no background that is just sort of lost
in
distance or whatever, you know, just a black background.
Yeah.
Everything is fully rendered. And so you are completely immersed in this world throughout.
Yeah.
And that's where I really felt like this, the art succeeded.
Yeah, and it was, like I said, I mean, the character design in this, the way things are, you know, some of the panels put together are really great. There are others that just feel, and I think maybe it's in the facial features. I'm looking towards the back here where Chrome and Sonya are in the secret lair and she leans in and kisses him. And I don't know, the whole thing feels, I don't know, it doesn't look right. And I know that the artist was going for an awkward look between the two, but just the way the faces come together just doesn't work for me.
Sure, I think there definitely are several pages that it doesn't work, but yeah. Overall,
and like I said, the bigger the page, you know, the bigger the image that's being produced, the more spectacular it is.
Sure.
And because they have 6 issues to play with, they're not limiting themselves to the one splash page, you know, at the start and one splash page at the end. They can throw in, you know, half panel or half page splashes or...
Yeah.
There's a great one here about 3/4 of the way through the book where one of the creatures is talking to its creator. And it's a great... shot of sort of the mad scientist laboratory, and it's a real nod to Frankenstein, which I think is who the character is supposed to be.
Yeah, I think so.
The Frankenstein monster, and it's a really nice piece, and it sort of helps to drive home some of the points that were being, you know, brought up in this.
Yeah.
So the art was at worst serviceable, and in some places really outstanding. The story was fun, don't think about it too much, you know, a great summer blockbuster type thing.
Exactly.
And you know, at $15, not a bad deal for 6 issues.
Sure.
And again, that's if you pay full price for it. $15, I'm sure you can find it at, you know, your comic shop for less or online.
I do have one beef.
Yeah.
My binding is coming out already.
Really?
You bought this, like, what, a week ago?
Yeah. Oh, I see that. Yeah, it's separating in the back there.
Yeah, and so that's one complaint that I have. I don't feel like this book was bound very well. But other than that, I mean, yours is doing fine, right?
Yeah, mine's fine. You know, this is the first thing I've read from Radical. Radical came on the scenes, about 6 or 8 months ago, especially with their... Hercules story, which is they got a couple of house ads in the back, and you know, I'd heard good things about Hercules, but you know, I don't know, I'm not so sold on the character that I felt like I had to rush out and get him. But after reading City of Dust and enjoying it to the level that I did, it does make me kind of want to go and take a look at other Radical books. And I'm looking at it, they're all sitting at about that $15 price point.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's not a bad price point. And if they're anywhere near, like I said, I've heard good things about Hercules. I'd be willing to go and give this company another shot.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they're all, it looks like 150, 160 page full color books for that $15 price range. I mean.
Mm-hmm. Not bad at all. And like I said, it'll be interesting to see if they keep it up. You know, they've got some pretty big name artistic talent working with them. It'll be interesting to see if, you know, if the stories hold up to the art. In this case, I think that the story and the art went pretty well together. And, yeah, I'd be willing to check it out again, check out another one. And hopefully there will be a sequel to City of Dust. It definitely ends with a feeling like this was chapter one, that there's, you know, potentially more to come from the
character. I think it says at the very beginning, or at the very end, it says beginning.
Yeah.
It ends with, things need to be brought into the light, and I'm just the man for the job. The beginning. ... So, yeah. And I'll definitely be picking up the next one. I mean, it was an enjoyable read and a fully rendered sci-fi world with politics and everything built in with that. So, I'll be looking forward to it.
Yeah, I will too. And looking at, you know, there's some cover art in the back, and what I found interesting was the concept art. They had Lower City and Upper City concept art, and both of them are pretty striking. Just the concepts of these, you know, it's sort of the, you know, you get the sort of the Blade Runner type thing where there's the Upper City and the Lower City, and, you know, the twain shall not meet. And so on the one hand, it's kind of cliched, but God, it's such a great visual that they've got going on here.
Yeah.
You know, really, this is a fun book, and definitely, like I said, entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely entertaining.
You've been listening to Stumptown Trade Review, your online resource for independent trades and graphic novels. You can find us at www.stumptowntradereview.com.
Sleeping, yeah. Got a city, never wants to. I gotta put a stop, yeah. Can't people live for free? Call the cops, yeah. Here comes the SWAT team, then the F-16, shoot the walls in this way.